south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, you guys are going to like this little boots on the ground story. Not for content. You're going to hate the content, but you're going to love it for shock value. Now, if you heard last week's show, I was talking about the fact that I was stuck with an Uber driver in El Salvador for 4 or 5 hours, right before my Expat Insider seminar. You heard me say a semi-trailer flipped over parallel to the road, so I was stuck in line with around 800 or so other cars with 4 or 5 hours on my hands, and naturally, I got to talking to my Uber driver, who had a car that was a piece of crap, but his English was pretty good. By the way, every man here in Latin America, not women, has a nickname. And this guy's nickname was Tiburon, which means shark, which makes you pause a bit. How'd he get that name? You're thinking, should I be worried? Anyway, he was a nice enough guy, pudgy guy with foul breath, which seems to be an occupational hazard for Latin males because they never floss their teeth. At least that's what Latino dentists always tell me. With the exception of dentists, their families, other medical professionals, and gays. Hey, I'm not making this stuff up. Ask any Latino dentist and you'll hear the same thing. Anyway, me and El Tiburon, the Uber driver named Shark, had lots of FaceTime together. All windows down in the vehicle because, like I said, his breath would paralyze a rhino. So anyway, right off the bat, since his English was fairly decent, I said, where'd you learn it? He said, in New Jersey. Then I said to him, well, why aren't you there now? How come you're down here in Salvador? But I knew the answer. He was an illegal who got deported. The fact is, he said he got deported twice. Once in an ICE raid at a meatpacking plant, and once at an Amazon-style warehouse. Then I said, well, when are you going back? He said, oh, I want to, but I don't think it's going to be for a long, long time. Then he said, I've got 3 sons, and 2 of them are living up there. And I said, what kind of work are they doing? And he replied with the usual suspect answer, construction. I said, are they legal? He said, no, not yet, but they're working on it. And I said, how? How can they pull that off? He said, easy. Best way, marry a Latina who's a resident or a citizen. He said, it's in the works. It's being arranged. It's not happened yet. But until then, they're lying low and being careful. And I said, oh, so that's how some young Latino guys get to be legal. He said, yeah, it's pretty good business for the girl. Then he rolled his eyes and said, it's not free. Usually it'll cost you $1,000 to $5,000, depending on the girl. And you might have to throw in a decent car with it, too. Then I said, sounds like a racket. Speaking of cars, this is your car, right? He said, of course. I'm an Uber driver. This is my car. I said, you own it outright? He said, with a big-ass grin, damn right I do. Sin pagos. By the way, it was a junk. A 2006 Hyundai Sonata. Quite dinged up, and the interior shoddy, to say the least. And when he clicked on the AC, it smelled like stale locker room ass. In the States, it wouldn't have been roadworthy, but apparently good enough to pass Uber specs in Latin America. Oh, and down here in Latin America, South America, Central America, even the Caribbean, Hyundai Sonatas are everywhere. Must be some kind of dumping ground for the ones they can't sell anywhere else because they're not much to look at, much less drive. Then I said, your kids send back remises? He said, yeah, that's how I got this car. Oh, I should mention, this guy was around 40 years old, and his 2 illegal kids up in the States, one 17, one 21. Now, here's the part that really threw me. I said, you know, it's a long way from El Salvador to the U.S. You got to go through Guatemala, Mexico, then you got to get across the Rio Grande. I imagine you have some familiarity with coyotes, right? He winked and said, yep, I know this system. And, you know, since we had a lot of time sitting in that car, we bonded a bit. I bought him a couple of beers right in front of the cops, by the way, because if you remember from last week's show, they were standing right in front holding the line till they could remove the overturned semi. And me and the Uber guy had an in-your-face view of it all. We were about the 10th car right at the front of the roadblock. Anyway, the Uber guy explained that there are coyotes operating in every country in Central America. And here, I thought they only operated in Mexico. In other words, you can pick up a coyote from El Salvador like he did, and he'll set up your passage all the way through to the United States. I said, well, what's it cost? He said, $8,000. used to be, he said, before Trump, around 3 to 5. And I said, so you did that twice? That's 16 grand, man. Wow, that's a lot of dough. Then I asked him, what's your reason for sneaking into the States twice? He said, it's the United States, man. Opportunities. By the way, never once did this guy ever mention he, his family, or any of his buddies had left because of danger, gangs, oppression, or police brutality. For him, in his case, and for his friends and family, it was all about the money. In fact, he elaborated and mentioned how a lot of his buddies had made it up to Illinois because they'd heard they were enacting a new minimum wage law, $15 an hour, which is what the average Salvadoreño makes in a whole day in his own country. He said, of course, wherever you go in the States, you make a little under the minimum wage. That's how it works. That's the system. Meatpacking plants, construction outfits, etc., hire you for slightly under the minimum wage because you're working for cash off the books. He said, logically, it makes sense to go to states with the highest minimum wage. Why go to a state like Idaho or Georgia, where the minimum wage is only around $7.50, when you can go to Arizona, California, Colorado, where it's $12 or so? But most of us, he said, have family up in the States, and they've already staked out a job for us. Then there are people who will sell you a nice ID for $100. So the boss is off the hook, and the off chance immigration comes around. These days, he said, a boss won't hire you without an ID, and he's not going to check up on you to see if it's real. He just wants to know you've got an ID. Then I said, wait a minute. If it costs $8,000 to get a coyote, and everyone coming across cries poverty, they're all broke, where do you get that money? He said, most of us, from our uncle. I said, you mean you got a rich uncle? He said, no. That's what we call the local loan shark that lends us the money for the coyote. We call him uncle. Everyone knows that term down here. He says, you have a sit down with this guy, your uncle. He lends you the $8,000 at 1% a month. You've got 1, sometimes 2 years to pay it off, depending on your family co-signers. That means your mother, father, sisters, brothers, etc. are on the hook for it if you get deported and can't pay it. But, he said, everyone pays it, on time too, because if you don't, someone in the family gets whacked. But, he said, things are changing, the way Trump's threatening and tightening up things. The coyotes, he says, are offering a new option, to go directly to Canada. The cost? $12,000, but it's door-to-door service. I asked, how's that work? He said, you meet the coyote here, in this case, El Salvador. You pay him $2,000. He holds your hand all the way up through to the Guatemala border. Hands you off to another coyote in the chain. You pay him $2,000, always cash. He then holds your hand all the way through Guatemala till you get to the Mexican border. Hands you off to the next coyote in the chain. You pay him $2,000. He handholds you till you get to the U.S. border. Another coyote, another $2,000. He holds your hand on through to the Canadian border. You hand over another $2,000 and you're there. I said, wow, $12,000, that's a pretty big hit. Yeah, it's hefty, all right, he said, but if you get caught as an illegal in Canada, they almost never deport you. Then I said, but Canada, man, that's cold. He said, yeah, that sucks, but it's automatic asylum. He said, in the States, it's only like that in the so-called sanctuary cities, like in California. Then I said, wait a minute, all you guys on the march are carrying $8,000 to $12,000. You guys are marks, aren't you just asking to be robbed? He said, you'd think so, but that's not the case. If you're borrowing that $8,000 or $12,000 at interest from your uncle, you're buying protection, insurance too. He's part of that chain, that organization. However, if, for example, it's your own money or you're collecting it on your own from your family members, then you are at risk. All bets are off. Because as long as you're in for 1% a month VIG to uncle, it's a business, an income stream for them, and they're not going to ruin the business by having their clients robbed, raped, and sold as sex slaves along the way. And it's not good business shagging down family members, killing them, and breaking legs. Nice business model, huh? Anyway, after 4 or 5 hours with that guy, he finally got me to my hotel destination, at which time he pulled the oldest cab driver trick in the book. I pulled out a 20 for a $12 ride. He shrugged his shoulders and said, hombre, lo siento. No tengo sencillo. Sorry, no change. I'll give it to you next time. Yeah, right. I said, next time? He said, for sure, and handed me his card. Then I said, well, how about I don't pay you now and pay you double next time? You should have seen the expression on his face. But I wasn't squawking because I was stuck with the guy for 4 or 5 hours, and he had no fares going during that time. Only me, and we had a fixed price. Though I did give him some parting advice. I said, look, You know the number one rule of business is to always have change. He just shrugged and tried to look innocent. I know he was lying. You know, I can't tell you how many dozens and dozens of times I've had that very same conversation with cashiers, gas station attendants, waitresses, even shoeshine boys. Now, you might think most of them are doing it on purpose because they know a gringo will round off to the high side and pay him the extra. I'm thinking most of them are kind of dense and are not thinking that far ahead. Another telltale sign of third world business incompetence. Enter your gringo advantage. Oh, and on a related theme, while I was waiting around with that Uber driver in that line, I had a chance to talk with a couple of the cops that were mulling around. And naturally, being cops, I thought, why not talk about crime and punishment? So I said to one of them, a lady cop, I understand from 2013 to now, there's been around a 50% drop in homicides and violent crimes in Salvador, Honduras, Guatemala, and most Central American countries. I said, is that true? Are you really seeing that? Or is that fake news, PR, and propaganda? She said, that's true. I've been on the force 6 years, and that's exactly right. When I first started, she said, we had about double the violent crimes that we're seeing this year. I said, is that because of better or more efficient law enforcement or more cops or more political will? What's your take on it? She smiled and said, maybe some of that, but it's mostly because of you gringos. I said, really? What do you mean? She said, everyone wants to go to the United States, including me. The truth is, she said, a large number of our gang members and criminals find it's much easier and the rewards are greater up in the States. A pretty revolting development, if you ask me. Now, that's something to think about, which is, for me, reason 2,426 why it's time to get the hell out of Dodge. And now, from the things that make me sick department, here's a story in an article that has not been widely publicized. I wonder why. In fact, it comes out of the British newspaper, The Guardian. Somehow, mysteriously, this news, which should have been publicized all over Latin America, just has not been on the radar down here. You'll know why in a minute. This is an article that came out just a couple of weeks ago. Title, Mexican Church Leader Held in L.A. on Child Rape and Trafficking Charges. I thought I'd mention this now because church elders abusing their parishioners and kids, minors and such, and we see exposing them in public is all the rage now, right? With Catholic priests being major league players and Protestant churches more or less amateurs, minor league. The thing is, there's more coming from Latin America that you just haven't heard about. All right, this article starts out by saying the leader, the apostle, yeah, right, they're calling themselves apostles now, of La Luz del Mundo, a Mexican-based church with branches in the U.S. that has more than 1 million followers, has been charged with human trafficking and child rape. Then they show a photo of this grinning, fat-ass, perverted human dung bag, his arms raised in front of thousands of his idiot, brain-dead followers. It goes on to say the leader, Joaquin Garcia, and a 24-year-old Susan Medina Oxala were arrested on Monday after landing in Los Angeles International Airport. Meanwhile, about 1,000 worshippers gathered at the headquarters of La Luz del Mundo, that means the light of the world, in Guadalajara, Jalisco, on Tuesday evening to pray for Garcia as he was held in Los Angeles on $25 million bail. It says Garcia, 50, faces 26 felony charges ranging from human trafficking and the production of child abuse images of rape. The charges detail disturbing allegations involving adult and minor women between the years 2015 and 18 in Los Angeles County, USA. It says the fundamentalist Christian church, the Light of the World in English, was founded in 1926 by Garcia's grandfather. It has since been the subject of child abuse allegations for years, even decades. But authorities in Mexico never filed criminal charges against the puke, I mean, apostle. Why? Well, turns out his church is Mexico's largest fundamentalist Christian church and one of the top five fundamentalist Christian churches in the world with more than 15,000 churches in 58 countries. You can look it up on the website. It says here, Pastor Garcia was minister in many churches in Southern California before becoming the church's leader. It says he would coerce victims into performing sex acts by telling them that refusing would be going against God himself. It says he forced victims who were members of the church to sexually touch themselves and each other. Then it says co-defendants took nude photographs of victims and sent pictures to Garcia. Victims testified after they had completed a flirty dance wearing as little clothing as possible in front of Garcia that he would then say to them, "Kings can have mistresses, and an apostle of God like himself cannot be judged as a common person for his actions." It says, the California Attorney General's investigation began in 2018, prompted by tips to the California State Justice Department's online clergy abuse complaint site. How about that? Never knew that existed. An online clergy abuse complaint site. Excellent idea. Anyway, it goes on to say, Alondra Ocampo, 36 years old, was arrested yesterday in Los Angeles County and will be arraigned on similar charges. While a fourth church elder, Aleza Rangel Belendez, remains at large. So why am I bringing this up? Well, just to point out, that kind of stuff happens with churches here in Latin America too. But being that Latin America is so Christian, they just hate reporting on that stuff. Case in point, when me and my expat insider group were on the road, whipping down the Pan American Highway south through Guatemala onto El Salvador, we always pull the bus over and pause a moment at kilometer 25, that's the signpost, to have a look at and comment on, and of course, make fun of, this gigantic flying saucer-shaped church that they claim holds 30,000 true believers. It's a gigantic evangelical church called Casa Dios, that means House of God. Inside, they've got a $2 million TV studio broadcasting a couple of dozen religious stations around the world. And the head man, pastor, get this, Cash, C-A-S-H, yeah, you got it right, Luna, L-U-N-A, that means money moon in English, who, by the way, has two private jets and five or six pure white Mercedes SUVs and a half a dozen full-time bodyguards. Of course, Jesus would approve. Oh, and by the way, last year he was fingered in the news for taking $500,000 in narco money, which, when you come to think about it, probably is slightly better than recycling it into next year's cocaine crop. Anyway, it's a thoroughly sick enterprise for gullible idiots. And normally, you know, I completely go along with that saying, a fool and his money are soon parted. But the irony is, here's a guy with a $10 million jet and a $50 million church in a country where the adult average wage is $300 to $400 a month. Not too much wrong with that picture, right? Enough said about that. Now an email. This one comes from Tono. He says, "Dear Johnny, thanks a bunch for talking about Cuba in one of your May shows. I lived there till I was 18 years old. I'm in my jammy now and I've lived here for around 30 years, but I do remember. I remember the oppression, the brainwashing, fear of government, abuse of the citizens, where no one had goals or hope of achieving anything because the government owned everything. Of course, when you're born there and you've lived there all your life, you don't know what it's like on the other side, so you accept everything that happens as normal, the way things are. I remember working from 5 a.m. till 6 p.m. nonstop, and I'd get 82 pesos a month. People told me at the time that related to around $35 a month in the United States, but it didn't matter to me because we couldn't use or trade dollars there anyway. I also remember going to public school. There were no private schools. And the teachers weren't actually trained teachers, not trained for the job anyway. But even if they had been, they couldn't do the job well anyway because we had no notebooks or books to study from, or even pencils. In fact, we used to have a pencil drive every new semester and go door to door, us kids, collecting a few pesos here and there to buy pencils and paper. But really, Johnny, I am exaggerating a little bit. It's not that we had no books. There were plenty of books and magazines with communist themes. And I also remember being hungry and eating one meal a day and having only one pair of shoes, though all of us school kids did have nice matching uniforms. I also remember the times when there was no toilet paper at all and we had to use old magazines and paper bags, and the country folks used tobacco leaves. Ouch. Maybe that's what makes Cuban cigars so special, huh? I added that. Anyway, Tono says, and toothpaste? I remember no toothpaste. I never saw a tube of toothpaste till I was something like 12 years old. I also remember one day going to the movies and one little kid asked his mom what the actress on the screen was eating. It was an apple, and I realized he'd never seen an apple up close in his life. I also remember not being able to walk on the streets past 8 at night without being stopped and questioned by the cops or authority. I also remember a few of my own friends going to jail because after they finished high school, they couldn't find a job, and you must, by law, have a job. By law, the government was also supposed to supply you with one. But since the right hand of government didn't know what the left hand was doing, they often didn't match up. And when faced with that catch-22, the government was never wrong. It was your fault, and you either sat it out in jail till someone you knew found you a job, or they'd hand you a machete and you'd be out in the sugar fields. Translated in English, they used to call it, quote, the endangerment law, unquote. But what me and my friends most remember was that every day of our lives we used to think of making it to the USA, though the government highly discouraged us, telling us that TV and radio from Miami, which came in loud and clear, was pure propaganda aimed at us by the U.S. government to corrupt the revolution, break our spirits, and poison our souls with capitalist commercialism. But boy, Johnny, were we jealous. We wanted capitalist commercialism. Then, when I was 18, me and a few of my family members made it to Miami. We always took it for granted Americans knew the evils of socialism. They were smarter than us and would never let it creep in. Johnny, it's a terrible thing to say, and I hate to say it, but in the end, Castro was right. The USA would rot from the inside out, not the outside in. I don't have to tell you, Johnny, that what I see sickens me. Worse yet, my undereducated Latino brothers who make it to the U.S. and finally become legal, they vote for and champion the politicians who promote the very same ideas that had ruined their countries and perpetuated third world stereotypes and the reasons why they got the hell out in the first place. I'd like to mention social justice warriors for a second, who are always promoting gender neutrality. I, for one, know the Cuban government does not tolerate gays and would never permit gender-neutral bathrooms or transvestite queens on street corners. Though these days you'll see a few gay activists here and there, but they don't hang around long. They're tagged, marked, and indexed by the government as undesirables. Yes, Johnny, they too have an overwhelming desire to get the hell out of Havana and get up to the States. That's true of Venezuela, too. They don't tolerate gays and would never permit gender-neutral bathrooms or travestite queens mulling around on street corners either, not in Caracas. Although every night you see a few taking a chance on the streets, but it's not very healthy to do so. Though, of course, there are plenty of gay bars in Caracas, low profile, of course, in Havana, too. But unlike in the United States and in Europe, the owners have to bribe the local cops to keep them open. As for me, Johnny, I'm 48 years old. I went to college in Florida, and I lived 5 years in Caracas working as a contractor in the BP oil fields. I know Venezuela. There isn't a transvestite or openly gay person I know or have heard of that hasn't been harassed or beaten by the local cops. Meanwhile, it's very different for gays and travestis in other Latin countries like Mexico, Colombia, Costa Rica, Panama, Paraguay. By no means do the authorities bother gays and travestis like they did in the less enlightened days before the millennia. It seems ironic because we are talking about very macho societies. The wave of tolerance we're seeing now has to do with the media, the internet, translated U.S. cable TV, and a real love of Latinos for Hollywood movies, especially action movies. Those influences have caused cracks in the macho Latin culture. Though the full, wide, fluid gender spectrum you hear about over and over again in the U.S. media might never be completely accepted in Latin culture. The irony is, the outright castigation, separation, and abuse of gays, lesbians, etc. seems only obvious and evident in Cuba and Venezuela. From my experience, Johnny, the more socialistic a country, the less socially enlightened. Since I left Cuba all those years ago, I've been back a number of times. I've got relatives there. The first thing you notice as soon as you land is that Cubans don't have credit cards. They have banks, all right, and bank accounts, but rarely pump them up or top them off. What I mean is there are plenty of remesas coming in from mostly Florida, but people don't put that money in the bank. They get their dollars directly from Western Union and put it under the mattress or elsewhere around the house. Because the government has complete access to your bank accounts and all your information, and they could come to you and ask you, why you have this extra money above and beyond your salary? Where did it come from? Then you're in trouble. Regular Cubans know what their government can do to them, so they don't want to take a chance and put any remesas in the bank. On top of that, regular Cubans only started having mobile internet access in 2018, last year. Try to imagine if you didn't have internet for the last 20 years. Even though limited internet is available, the censored access is very expensive, so expensive that Few average Cubans use it beyond messaging tools like WhatsApp. In fact, WhatsApp is a Cuban's lifeline to the outside world. And did you know that Western Union currently handles almost all of the Cuban remittance services? You see, in 2018, $3 billion came in remittances from the U.S., mostly from Cubans in Florida. And Western Union's take? Around 10%. That's $300 million in the pockets of Western Union just for remittances to Cuba. What a racket. That's why I've finally been hearing some rumblings about using Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies to transfer money back and forth. That would cut Western Union off at the knees. Right now, if you send $100 to a relative in Cuba, Western Union will take 10. With Bitcoin, Litecoin, or some of the others, the transfer fee, well under a dollar. It's not something people think about, but you can see why money transfer services like Western Union and MoneyGram absolutely hate cryptocurrencies and want to see them die. Something else people don't realize, Cuban news is of interest, especially in Florida. In Miami, 54% of the population is Cuban or of Cuban descent. And Johnny, I suppose you're old enough to remember Castro's boat people. That started in 1980. Remember, he emptied out the prisons and sent thousands of psychopathic criminals and gays on rickety boats to Miami. And the U.S. accepted all of them. Something like 130,000 in the first wave. But what people don't know is that in Miami, within a few years, the crime rate doubled. But with all those lessons learned, still, young people in America are enamored with the idea of socialism. Running around with their Che Guevara t-shirts. If they only knew what a cold-blooded, murdering psychopath that guy was. Then Tono finishes with a quote from a guy named Norman Mattoon Thomas. He was Socialist Party presidential candidate way back in the early 20th century. You can look this up. It's real. Quote, "The American people will never knowingly adopt socialism, but under the name of liberalism, they are adopting every fragment of the socialist program. The USA will be a socialist nation without knowing how it happened. I no longer need to run as a presidential candidate for the Socialist Party. The Democratic Party has adopted our platform." Whoa, Tono, me Johnny here. You're painting a really bleak picture for us. Seems like there's no way out of it except to get the hell out of Dodge. Now, where have I heard that before?
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!